The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. Hey everyone, I'm Sarah Edmondson.
Hi, I'm Anthony Ames, Sarah's husband, aka Nippy.
And we're here to talk about things that are just a little bit culty. We were in a cult and we woke up, and it was all captured in a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, also in my memoir, Scarred.
And then we made this podcast. I guess you could say we're technically a cult show now.
But not your typical cult show. We're not so much about the grisly details. We are about kicking the doors down on the shame and the secrets that make these culty things so destructive.
We're here to have frank conversations about how cool things can cross over into the cultiverse. How to spot trouble when you see it, and what happens when it comes to recovering from something culty, if that happens to you.
Each week, we'll call on experts, advocates, fellow survivors, and whistleblowers to help us unpack what's going on in the cultiverse.
We're here to share what we know on everything from red flags to resiliency, and to have a few laughs along the way, because sometimes you gotta laugh.
Thank God. Now, we have a lot to cover, so let's get this show rolling, shall we? A Little Bit Culty Season 2 drops new episodes every Monday on the Acast app or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And to learn more, visit us on Instagram or at alittlebitculty.com. Thanks, everybody, for coming back for this epic adventure with Mark Vicente. If you haven't listened to part one, I recommend that you do that. And let's just jump right back into it, shall we?
Normally, the ultimate question is like, am I a good person or something like that? Like, that's the fundamental base question of it. It's kind of like, if you're having a problem with your behavior, that's normally an indication that you're not the thing that you're afraid of being, right? Mm-hmm. Like certain people, like I saw on this one podcast, this person's like, am I a narcissist? The response, a narcissist doesn't care if they're a narcissist.
Didn't we say that?
Yeah, right. Not at all.
In Nexium?
Yeah.
People being concerned if they're a suppressive probably meant.
Suppressive would never ask that question or care.
So
yeah.
Shame has a function in terms of your conscience, right? I mean, I don't think you should spend a lot of time there because it's a very low base.
Yeah.
Like, it's a low functioning emotion, but you are exploring shit when you're feeling shameful or embarrassed or whatever. Yeah. I felt like you can turn that into a positive pretty quickly, I think.
You can. And also, just to go back to that last question, I think there's a lot of feelings that we're terrified of, and shame's one of them. Mm-hmm. We're terrified of it because it feels like this kind of annihilation. And I think it's really good to in a safe environment, in a safe place, with or without people you feel safe with, to just really go in and figure out what that feeling is, what that terror is, you know, because I find you can survive it. And it's actually not necessarily what we thought, because a lot of the things that we're taught to be ashamed about are actually not things to be ashamed about. We've been gaslit quite severely, you know. Speaking of shame, I do have a message from Bonnie, because earlier today I was having lunch with her. She's out now, but I said, yeah, do you have any kind of message? She said, what do you think? And she said, I do. So, and you can use this wherever you want, obviously. But her message was that she sends her love to you, Sarah, and Nippy, and the audience. And her one message to people is to continue looking at how they might be participating in any systems that use guilt, shame, coercion, bullying, and fear as a tool of control. She wants to emphasize that it doesn't just happen in a personal growth cult. It's everywhere. And we need to learn to see it and to stop participating in it.
Well put, bonfire.
That was her message. Bonfire.
To give her bonfire. A big hug from us.
Yeah, I will.
Many people want to know how you guys are doing, how you and Bonnie are doing.
Yeah, we're doing great. I mean, honestly, you know, the whole thing about never having a, what do you call that thing after you get married?
Honeymoon.
That guy gaslit Eddie.
What does it mean that you want to vacate from
your life? Oh my God,
I
got so destroyed. I know. And by the way, we went at one point, we went to Tulum, and then everybody came along, you know, because we were trying to get away.
Oh
shit.
To like somewhere else. And then like fucking everybody came with us and we're like, and then like Lauren was there too. And we're like, just the two of us and Lauren, and we're like, okay, what? But anyway, so one of the things that was very important for us is to like, just get away.
Yeah.
We just want to get out of the US, get away from all the bad memories. And honestly, just go, you know, spend time in Portugal, which we did. And finally we had some time together alone.
So good.
There was no war anymore. There was no battle anymore. And we decided like, what if we could actually live our life? You know, Tim Ferriss is an interesting dude. And he talked once about, I think it was in his book, The 4-Hour Work Week. Like, he says, why don't you live like you're on vacation? And what he meant by that, why wait until you're 60 and then go and live where you want to live? And so we're like, yeah, good point. So we thought, well, why don't we just go spend some time in Portugal? And so we're still working very hard, but like outside my window, I've got the ocean with massive crashing waves. And it's fucking beautiful. So we're now really pursuing our art and you know, our craft, and really reconnecting with ourselves and reconnecting with each other in a way that we didn't have time to all those years. I mean, you know, one of the things I love, Sarah, is you have the hashtag things I have time for. Mm-hmm. And what's so great, we have time for each other.
Yeah.
You know, we have time for each other. We have time for our art. We have time to think. We have time to feel. We have time to just really just sit and look at nature. We have time to drink incredible Portuguese wine and eat really good food. You know, we have time for all these things now.
Do you feel like you can do those things without feeling any guilt or like anything come up in you being like, oh, I need to work more, or like not satiate, which is the next M word, right?
I still struggle a bit. I still struggle a bit with that, where it gets to the end of the day and I sort of look at like how much I accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel like I don't know that was enough. But then I get reminded, usually by Bonnie. Like I get up at like 5 or 6 in the morning here. I'm 8 hours ahead of LA. At 4 o'clock, my LA day starts.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, I have these ridiculously stupid long days and I have to actually create a boundary, and she helps me with it. Like say, listen, let's not do calls after this time. So am I getting to everybody I need to get? No. Am I behind in stuff? Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, at first I was like, fuck, I got to do this, I got to do that. And I would start to feel this pressure of like, I have to. But that was part of my programming as a child. I have to just please, I have to do this.
Well,
I have to do that.
You and I got along. You
know, getting to the point, like I don't have to. Oh yeah. Man, you know, childhood was a rough place. So we're doing really well. I will tell you that it was hell. And then especially the end of last year was really rough for us. And just, you know, going off social media, because it just got so cruel. It was so unkind.
I'm so sorry that you went through that, Mark. You and Bonnie especially don't deserve that. And, you know, Nippy and I have gone to the nth degree as best we can to have your back
that.
And like
that.
Protect you, because you guys were really the, you know, the warriors. And like you said, we all had different roles, but to be in the public eye and be shamed for doing the right thing.
I know, that's
thing,
the like, thing that I struggle
that
with.
That chaps my
that's
ass.
That's really awful. Yeah.
It chaps my ass too, let me tell you. But I did understand eventually, like, you know, there's a double-edged sword with really expressing oneself, you know, and being emotional, which is the one degree people go like, oh, I can relate to that. But then also you become a symbol of stuff that's unresolved in them. A lot of people shadow shit and stuff that they're upset at comes out. You know, and I felt like to some degree I became this figurehead of people to get really angry at, because I got deluded by something. I got fooled by something. Like, you know, somehow that I was so stupid that why didn't I see it? Because I think what goes on for them is they're like, they were in situations like that and they haven't found peace with it. We all become targets of different things.
Also, Mark, I mean, there's some diagnostics that I felt like if you understood too, maybe you do, it might put it in perspective. I think one of the things the internet has people erroneously convinced of is that it's a majority of people's opinion. I mean, normally the kind of person that takes the time to write something negative is, you know, I call Twitter the bathroom wall of social media, right? It's just everyone has access to it. And then they just go dump on it. The same people that would write jokes on a bathroom wall. It's like for a good time call. And all these people have access to it. In a lot of ways, their voices are being elevated to people who actually have a critical thought process. Also, more people are going to be motivated to write negative things than positive things. Nobody hops on social media and go, I'm going to write something positive today. You know, it just doesn't.
It's wonderful when it does happen, though. And I do get a lot of those things, too.
So times two that, because someone is so inspired and they're the kind of person who is going to go, I'm going to take the time to uphold this person and write inconvenience myself to write something positive.
Yes.
Normally, when someone is writing something negative, it's because they have an itch they can't scratch, and it's coming from a toxic place. But someone who actually takes the time to inconvenience themselves, use their psychology to write something positive, odd times too. You know, it's like a double like, because it's a positive thing, and more people are motivated to write negative shit.
Yeah.
Two things I want to say. What partly for you, but also partly for our listeners, because a lot of people here are survivors and also motivated to speak out and share their story because of, you know, what we've done with The Vow, which is also like a tremendous service. Yeah. So remember that, you know,
we've been foot soldiers and been on the other end of it.
Especially with the ex-Mormon community. Right. I think I've told you this, right? Or maybe not. The people saying, I left the Mormon church because of The Vow, which they were just watching because it was like, you know, Tiger King, about like just another documentary to watch. Right. And then they were like, holy shit, I'm in a high demand group. And they got out because of it. Like 1 to 10, sometimes more than that, emails, Instagram messages a day for people sharing stuff like that. So anyway, people are motivated to share their stories. And then of course they're getting, you know, vitriolic hatred back. And one of my psychologists said to me, every time you read something negative, if you're going to, which she said, I recommend you don't, but if you do, then train yourself to go read at least 10 positive things, for which there,
absolutely,
that was definitely the ratio. Absolutely. Like if you look at the comments, right, on our Instagram post about you, there's 129, I just checked. There was one salty post.
Yeah.
There was one out of 129. Yeah. And I gave that person a little piece of my mind, as I said, because I like boundaries.
You know what they can do with that salty post, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know what they
can do.
Stick
it up their salty ass.
Yes.
I don't take things the same way anymore. Now I'm like, you know what? Fuck you.
Shove it.
Fuck off.
My favorite is second.
You don't even know who you're talking to. You're like, you've turned me into some symbol in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Of some bullshit that's unresolved.
It goes
fuck
the
you.
Other way.
Yeah.
The positive, I appreciate, but I don't get drunk on that the same way I don't get upset about.
I just get wasted. I just get like, I just roll around.
But you know, Nippy, you and I had this discussion once. This lives in me now. Like, it didn't so much the end of last year, but now it lives in me. Like, if somebody's going to say some shit to me, where were you, motherfucker, during the war? Were you in the trenches with us?
No, you weren't. No.
Right.
So shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Once you've done a battle like that,
then you can comment.
Now I'll have respect for you. And now you can say something to me. And if you're like a warrior, I might listen. But if you're not a warrior.
Well, successful people don't punch down.
Yeah.
They just don't.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing I have to say. My dear friend Caroline, who I know you know, Mark, shared with me because I think I told her I'd read something that like just really upset me. It was one comment. I don't even remember what it was. And she said something about like, if you see a bear in the woods, because it's a potential death threat, your fight or flight goes up, right? And you focus in on that, and it's more heightened because of the fight or flight, and you think you're in danger, right? So it's the same thing with a negative comment. It sticks, like you've heard about this, right? Like you can read 100, so many positive things, but the negative comment, you go into fight or flight, so it's more heightened, and you narrow in on it, like the bear is coming to get me. So it feels more impactful than all the positive. So on a neurological level,
Yes, no, it's so true. But I mean, I want to just go back to, because now I'm in a slightly different, not slightly, very different place now. Like I feel such pride about what we all did.
Yes.
Like such incredible pride, because we lived through a war together that, I mean, it was a hell of a battle.
Yeah.
And based on how these things usually go, we should have lost, and we should all be completely and utterly bankrupt, and you know, it destroyed.
It was a blowout.
That's usually how these things go. Yeah, and you know what usually happens with people like us is somehow law enforcement moves on us, not the other way around.
Well, that's also historically what happened with KR.
Yeah. So like, I'm so proud of what we did, all of us. And I'm also so grateful to whatever the universe is and however it works, and whether it's divine or I don't know, but I am so grateful that the forces that I don't understand seem to push it in a certain direction. And I'm just like, it's just a lot of wow, like wow, that happened, you know? And also that we're free now. The thing I keep thinking about is like, thank God I'm not in that trap anymore.
No, right?
Thank God. And I say that for all of us, but it was a horrible, horrible trap. I didn't realize until later. I was so fucking depressed.
Yeah.
I had lost hope about many things.
We were operating our lives with proverbial ball and chain shackles. And to experience life without them now, it feels lighter, viscerally.
So much better.
Mark, do you remember the moment you were able to clear your calendar of all the ongoing, like a proctor call and commerce call and the coaching call and the executive call, goals call?
It's crazy. All of our calendars were insane.
Do you still get a coach email invite from Allison Mack's email?
No.
I tried to disconnect it. Shit's voodoo. It keeps popping back up.
I have a Proctor call on Mondays that I can't delete from my calendar. Yeah, it's crossed off, but it's in gray.
It's terrible.
And I see it. And I don't know who started it.
You should show that on Instagram one day.
I will.
Show what that looks like. But just to go back, I feel this immense freedom, and the stuff I'm doing now, I'm very excited about.
Tell
the
us,
stuff
that
I'm
was
doing,
one of our questions. Everyone wants to know.
Yeah, Bonnie, as you know, Bonnie's been doing all kinds of exciting stuff
Bonnie's
that I can't
Boba
talk about.
Fett.
But I'm sure you can go on social media. But this stuff that you can go and see online to figure out what's going
She's
on.
Thriving.
I can't say shit.
Biggest joy to observe.
Yeah. And then for me, I've been thinking a lot about, because one of the things that really helped me wake up. So in April 2017, my last conversation with Ranieri, before I had the conversation, I think this is in the vow, that conversation, maybe. But I had to call him and I had to figure out, how do I not, step on any minefields? And so basically what I thought to myself, I'm just going to sort of say so I really dug in now. And I don't see the point in anything anymore, because he was trying to get me to just relinquish whatever. So I thought, well, let me just play that game of I don't care about anything. And then of course he backpedaled and said, well, you have to still care. And I'm like, well, why, but anyway, before that call, she had me read an article about narcissism. And there were 12 points to this article of how you're dealing with, and this is a malignant narcissist. And during the call, of course, he did every single one of the strategies. And I was like, when I hung up, I said, oh my fucking God, he did every single one. And I was in shock, because this was the transition from mentor to this man has a fucking serious pathology. And that really stuck with me. And I looked a lot at all the, this is going to sound a little bit like ESP. It's not, but hear me out. But I looked at all the bad shit that's happening in the world. And I realized it's all happening because people with these kinds of pathologies are doing heinous shit. And the good people don't believe it's happening and don't believe it's possible, because they don't want to believe in that kind of evil.
No.
So malignant narcissism became this thing I was really fascinated in, more so than sociopathy and some of the extremes and people that murder. But this narcissism became interesting. And I thought to myself, I really want to make a film about that. So, we're in production now on this film about it. And it's been really incredible, because, we're interviewing a lot of interesting people, a lot of people that have been, been through narcissistic abuse, a lot of experts, people that have NPD that are willing to talk in camera. And I've learned so much. It's like therapy for me, honestly.
That's great.
And it's interesting because it doesn't trigger me, funnily enough. I think part of it is just being able to make a film, because you guys know, anytime I'm making a film about something I care about, I'm on fire, So making a film about what I think is the basis of so much abuse in the world. And one of the things we're looking at is, if you look at narcissistic abuse, in intimate relationships, in families, in small groups, in corporations, in cults, in churches, in political parties, in entire countries, mm-hmm. It's the exact same pattern. The only difference is more mm-hmm. people are being coerced. Mm-hmm. And I found that so interesting. And I do think that it's one of the biggest issues, of our time. And I make the distinction as well between just regular narcissism, which everybody should have and is kind of healthy, to the malignant thing where you don't give a shit about people and you're willing to destroy them for, for your gaping hole, whatever it is.
Not healthy.
But it's been, not healthy at all. But it's been really, really good for me. And so we're in production of this thing right now. And we're still actually looking for certain things, So we're still looking for stories, especially stories of narcissistic abuse in families, family environments. We have a lot of people that reached out about, intimate abuse, which is it's a heinous thing that we're still interested in looking at. We're still looking at, in sort of spiritual, religious environments. We're still looking for some of those stories, and then, political stories. So we're open for stories. And I actually sent you guys a link if anybody's interested in, sharing anything. So that we can talk to them for the film. But it's been very exciting to work in this film, and we've been traveling all over the place. And the theory is we should have it finished by June, the first one, because I think it's going to be three films. That's been super exciting, and that's sort of where most of my focus is at the moment. And of course, I'm still writing a bunch of things that I've been developing. A lot of things are ready to shop around, but I'm still in the background writing certain things. But my biggest focus is that right now.
It's so great to see you back on the horse, Mark.
Oh, it feels so good. It feels so good. And about something that I'm actually defragging my own brain as I make this, because every time I hear somebody talking, I go, oh, that's what happened. That's what happened. Because one of the things that people don't really understand that happens in narcissistic abuse, which is what we were all in that horrible spiral. When I woke up, I felt like I was, in Stranger Things, the Upside Down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys saw the show.
Yeah.
Like I woke up on the upside down thinking like, oh shit, I thought I was right way up. I'm upside down and inside out. And that's what that kind of abuse does to you. It destabilizes your psyche so much. And so one of the things that I'm wanting to do with the film as well is not only explain how these patterns work, and of course it's hell and everything, but really give people some help as to like, how do you get out of it? And once you're out, how do you heal from it? Mm-hmm. Because there is good news. Like I'll say personally for me, and I don't think I've said this to you guys, I don't think I've told you this because again, this is fairly recent. But if I look at my life, you know, if I look at Mark, this sounds like a fucking terrible ESP exercise, but if I look at my life of like who I've been and what my struggles have been, you know, this person, this kid that just thought I was bad and I had to find goodness somehow and somebody else had it. Okay, so like you look at this, the life of this guy, Mark, you go, well, how the fuck is this guy ever going to wake up? And the only way I could ever have woken up is to have a betrayal so profound, so deep, and so brutal that it would shock me out of that attachment, to use that word, to somebody outside being the conduit to my own goodness. And that's what happened.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org. Did anyone learn a language in high school and then let it go and then have regrets about that later? If you're anything like me, then maybe you'll relate. I did French all the way up into 12th grade, and then I let it go. I mean, I lived in Montreal for a few years and, you know, practiced a bit, but it just slipped away. And then I found Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. And thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy little bite-sized language lessons, I've been able to get back my French. I've actually found learning French to be fun again. And c'est vrai, je parle français. With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Formidable. That means wonderful in French. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Clearly still working on that. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code CULTY. That's BABBEL.com, code CULTY. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
And so the good news is, like, I'm free now. And I find that as people wake up from narcissistic abuse, they start to realize what they relinquished, what they gave up, and they didn't realize they were giving it up. And so there is they have the possibility of getting their power back that they may have agreed to bury somehow to stay safe from abuse, from getting hurt. And getting that back, I mean, that's the shit that life's about.
Yes.
You know, finding that true self again. So, you know, I want the film to reflect that because it's sort of, you know, part of my journey as well. And also, you know, I talk now and again about this book that I've been working on, which is called Quest. And the book was actually written in 2019, but I just felt like story's not over yet. There's more, and I don't feel right about, you know, putting it out yet. And I think I had to wait for what happened this year. And then I also had to stop because at first I was telling the story about what happened to all of us, obviously, but also to me under his mentorship. And I started to realize I'm focusing way too much on him. And I can't do a book about him. I have to figure out how to do this about my journey. And that's when I started to realize that my whole life has been a quest. And this terrible thing that happened to all of us was the culmination finally of beginning to arrive at what my quest has always been. Mm. It's not over by any means, but I've gotten in touch with my own goodness that was always there that I didn't know was there. You know, like in The Alchemist when the kid thinks his treasure's at the pyramid, but it turns out it was in the church he was sleeping in. Mm-hmm. The reason that book, you know, moved me so deeply is because that's the story of all of us. And I was looking at the pyramids for something that was always at home.
What are the precursors that you're most sensitive to now when you see these behaviors?
Any kind of manipulation and coercion, any kind of using, it's like Bonnie said, you know, she said she nailed it. She says anytime guilt, shame, coercion, bullying, and using fear as a tool, that to me is always like, I
didn't start that way.
I can feel when somebody's trying to bend me now. And
that's
I'm just
when
like,
I stop
oh, I
and I
that.
Just watch them.
No.
And I observe.
Yeah. And at times I just walk away. Mm-hmm. It's trying to get somebody to agree to something, which is usually agreeable. Like, do you think the sky is blue? Yeah, the sky is blue. But don't you think the particular angle, blah, 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 and you keep on going. And so you agree to the first few things and they try and bend you and bend you and bend you and bend you. And that's what Ranieri did with Love and Pain. He finally got people to believe that true love was your ability to handle pain, to handle pain. It didn't start that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, you know, Mobius, for instance, was really connecting people with their true self, and everybody felt incredible. And then he started to introduce penances, and then this, and then that. And then you know you love when you're willing to give something up, something really big, you know, and then Collateral was introduced. You know, that's an example of line bending. So I feel now when the minute somebody's salesy with me, I'm fucking allergic.
I was allergic before.
And that's the thing that's so funny. So was I. Yeah. And yet there we were. All those years later, right? And the other thing that is not a verbal thing, it's a visual thing. If somebody sits close to me and starts to stare at me with dead eyes, I'm like, fuck off.
Okay. So
fuck off.
I always felt Keith had dead eyes.
Yes.
I always felt when he gave me that kind of like, look in his face. Like, and this is a question I had earlier and I was thinking, like, how good a friend did he actually feel like to you? Because I felt like, if anything, I'm just, this is player coach. I'm here for this. And I mean, you and Jim had a friendship with him, but like, did he really feel like a friend? Like what was the, did he always feel like it was friends and I'm the guy who's telling you what to do? And like,
yeah, you know, the way it felt to me when I unraveled it later is I was always scared of him. And Nancy Salzman and Pam Kafers were the ones that sort of really got me thinking that he wants me as a friend, like he doesn't have any male friends kind of thing. So I thought he was the friend I thought he was the person I was supposed to have a friendship with. And the fact that I had so many uncomfortable feelings around him was my limitation.
You thought your gut instinct was you and not him.
Yeah. I mean, I just kept on suppressing it. And then, you know, Nancy at one point was, you know, floated the idea, you know, they always floated an idea, which is basically means do this. Why don't I just contact him every day, you know, because of my discomfort.
Oh yeah, you had me do that with him too later.
Right. awful. Right? For about fucking a year. I'm so sorry. So fucking awful.
No, don't. I'm not.
Seven fucking years I did that. 7 years. Yeah. Every single day.
Every day.
And most of the time I hated it. And I can see now, by the way, I can see why, you know, so many people have said about some of the women, well, why did you, you know, why did you sleep with him? Because you felt like, you know, I get it now. They felt like they had to overcome their not wanting to do X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And so what really chaps my ass is when these women that have been victimized in this way are given shit for doing things like that. And they don't give the person with a fucking pathology the shit. That chaps my ass. Jesus. That's bullshit. They spend more time talking about the victims and what they did wrong and less time talking about the con artist. If you're victimized by someone like this, the reason you couldn't see it is because you don't think like a fucking psychopath.
Do you remember the story that he told us, the thought exploration, but what it's like to be a sociopath, about how if you're in...
At apropos?
Yeah. Like if you want to know what it's like, imagine being in jail and like if you have to get out, you've got to kill somebody and doesn't that feel awful? And everyone goes, yeah, that feels awful. Imagine now that they're just robots, you have to like dismantle their wiring. Doesn't that feel better? Like you could... And everyone's like, yeah, I would just like dismantle the... I'd get out and dismantle the robot. So that's what it feels like to be a sociopath. They're just robots to dismantle. You don't see humans as humans. So I think I believe, and I know you and I have talked about this, is that he was just relishing in the fact that he was telling us exactly what he was doing, which is one of the things that sociopaths and narcissists love to do, right? Just to spell out for you. Wasn't there also a module about the six different types of destruction? Like if I'm suppressive and I'm jealous of your career, I can like key your car in a moment. But if I'm like really suppressive, I can like plan your, slowly poison your dog over time.
I feel like that was in 2C or 2D, I think. You know, the way that all of us in 2017, 2018, we were just a mess. And it was just horrible. And, you know, in some ways our backs were against the wall. So we're willing to do anything, which is the thing that they don't realize sometimes. These people with these pathologies, they don't realize once you have somebody who's got a soul and their back's against the wall, they'll do anything. But it was hell. And in that time, I never thought I would ever be well again. Like I thought my mind was going to be fucked forever. And I really want people to know you get through it and it's incredible.
Yes.
When you start healing, it is incredible. Because not only, it's not like you're back where you were, you're back in a better place.
Right. Without shackles.
Without shackles.
We always ask our guests, what have you done to heal? And I believe that you shared that really eloquently with your new regiment in Portugal. Is there anything else that you want to share about how to get to that other side of freedom?
I think, I know there's a lot of cool people and systems and I just hate all of them, but you know, I know there's a lot of cool stuff. But I found that nature was very healing. And I know that you guys try and go away on the weekends and I think it's beautiful. And I'm always like looking at your Instagram pictures and I love what you guys are doing with the boys and your dad at the cabin. But honestly, nature, there's something very profound about nature. There's some magic fucking juju there. For me, I stare at the ocean and it's this massive, incomprehensible thing. And I feel like, I guess like a dot. I feel like this little dot. And then I feel like everything at the same time encompasses the whole of everything. And in that place I go, I think this is more of who I am than any of the other stories, than any of the shame and the guilt and the self-hatred and any of the stuff. I think this is more home. And I'm a huge believer in nature. Huge. Just go to the places that I'm saying this to people that might be listening. Just go to the places that you feel the safest or the people that you feel the safest with and just experience yourself and be with people that won't judge you and pick you apart and that whatever you're feeling is totally cool. I think that's a really good regimen.
I really like that regimen. I think we're going to have to make a meme out of it and put it on our page so people can follow it.
I think that's the opposite of what he's suggesting.
No, it's cool. Make a t-shirt.
I'll make mugs. You know, it's funny. I couldn't agree more. I have two memories. And then one thing I would add to that list, and again, it was perfect. One thing was missing is getting together with ex-members, if you're part of a cult or a group like this, and just talk shit about the leadership. Like, let loose. you know, say the things you always wanted to say but couldn't say. And that's, I think, also really healthy. And I know.
Yeah. We did that for a number of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah.
And as you were talking about the ocean, I know that's something that you and I have always connected over. And like when you came to Vancouver, we used to go for long walks and talks on the beach and on the seawall. And when we met, and one of the memories I have, like I remember very clearly the moment that you shared with me about Keith and the community and humanity. Yeah. Do you remember where we were?
In the water, right?
Yes. We were standing in like these crystal clear waters because we were on that cruise and we were in the Caribbean, and it was like, oh, this is the best time of my life.
Right.
And you told me about it all. And I just, in your talking just now, I wanted to let you know that in reflection, I wouldn't change a thing from then till now.
Mm.
Just want you to know that because I really love my life and I wouldn't be here had I not gone on that fucking crazy journey with you.
Right.
So thank you.
It's not over.
Thank you for inviting me.
No,
to executive success.
Oh my God. I'm so happy to hear that. And if we not stood in the water, I wouldn't have bumped into you guys, you and Nippy in Silver Bay in your room wearing towels and realizing, oh, they're stepping.
Exactly. And then I wouldn't have my two beautiful children.
Exactly.
And so
that's where I was going. That's where I was going. I was going to the boys, but like I'll never forget. Like I think Sarah, I knocked on your door because I had to talk to you about something, and I was on the same floor.
It was room 222. Yeah. And you were
And you opened the door wearing a towel, and Nippy's back there wearing a towel, and I'm like, huh, they're stepping. Okay. And you both had these stupid grins in your face. It was not like guilt or anything. Stupid grins.
I remember the look on your face when you figured it out.
I just smiled. I was like, okay, all right. Guess I'll keep this on the down low. You know, I remember that. I remember that very well. And then I beat
Keith to the punch.
Jesus Christ, Nippy. He didn't have a chance on that one. Sorry.
No, but you have an incredible life. I mean, your two boys are so, so beautiful. And I feel the same way that you do, actually, because I don't know this experience I have of myself now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I would exchange this for anything.
Same.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also the wisdom.
Yes.
I'm not going to say it's more than other people. It's just more than I had when I started.
It's actually more than I thought was possible for me. It honestly is.
And great dinner conversation. I have a dinner party. I mean, certainly it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can go, anyone else been in a cult? Okay. We're going to.
Very few. It's good to see you guys mugs again.
Yeah. You too. I hope we get to do it in person again.
Yeah.
Soon.
Let's see what the next few months brings, you know, in terms of travel.
Oh, hey, I told you our podcast got
South by Southwest. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you can be there
South
by then.
South by Southwest.
That could be one.
Why don't you get your ass to Austin?
We have been talking about it, just so you know. We've been talking about it. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. We're trying to figure some things out right now. It also depends on production because I have to be shooting, you know, I'm shooting in January, February in the States, but I also have to shoot back in London as well. So it just depends.
I'll have my people talk to your people.
Ah, fuck that. We'll just WhatsApp each other.
Hey, so I do a gaslighting thing.
Have you heard
it? I heard it. The word salad.
Yeah. The word salad. Do you have one? Maybe I could hand it off to you.
No, God, I think I'm terrible. You need to do word salad.
Okay, I'll do it. I just, the word salad or the gaslighting that he gave you about when you said they looked like zombies.
I don't remember what it was anymore.
It was something like, there's a Harvard study that says for people who think they're seeing zombies, they're deficient in like something like sleep or some vitamin.
Basically Mark was saying that he was seeing that people were looking like zombies, and he basically instantly flipped it around that because Mark was seeing zombies, it meant something. And there was a Harvard study to prove it. I was
and then do you remember what I said? I said to him, okay, well then I guess I'm crazy. And then he backed out of that as well. By the way, at that point in my mind, what was going, fuck you, motherfucker. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. That was what was going on in my mind. But I was trying to control myself so carefully.
Hey there. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Quick reminder to follow us on Instagram. You can also share your favorite episodes with friends who may or may not be in a cult. And also reach out to us to let us know who you would love to hear as a guest. And now, a word from our sponsors. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed,
power and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
I had to make it look like I had no concerns or issues.
Right.
And so,
except to me.
I wrote, except to you.
Yeah.
So I wrote a fucking 3-page email with all my issues. And then I think Bonnie looked at it and she says, okay, no, 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 no. Short, sweet, unemotional. Ugh. And I cut it down to that eventually. And that was my resignation.
I'll set it up a little bit too. I had already been getting a hint from you that things were off. You know, even when you came out and you shot the pilot episode, before that, when I helped you pack, you know, I didn't press because I didn't know. I thought there was some stuff with Bonnie because you could use the fact that Bonnie was out and you were in as the issue. So I just kind of left it alone, thought it would work itself out. I fly back to New York and then get this email. I wake up to it. Subject: transition to my career, period, SOP. It's sent to Jim, Keith, and myself. Dear Keith, Jim, and Anthony. First fucking flag.
Anthony? Never call you Anthony.
Who's that?
The fuck, dude. Never. I was like, okay, all right, I'm getting subtext here. This is subtext.
I did that on purpose. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I know you did. And I read that, I was like, fuck, what is this? But also part of me is pissed.
Yeah, he was mad. Sorry, he was mad at you at this point until he gave me why. Yeah.
I have just sent my letter of resignation from ESP to the executive board. Along similar lines, I'm also resigning from the High Council and the SOP movement. You fucking dick. Now I got to do this shit on my own. There's no fucking way. I was done. As you all know, I have wanted to return to my career for many years, and I'm now taking that step. You fucking dick. You and your fucking career. I'll make sure to give you and the key staff access to any documents or files pertaining to the company and suggestions of who should take over teams that were under me. You fucking dick. You just made more work for me. You fucking dick.
How many times
this is never going to fucking work? God damn it. Sarah, did you see the fucking email Mark sent? Fuck, I'm done.
But Sarah,
I'm
knew more at this point, right?
I knew more.
Well, yeah. So this is the weekend, right? Because this is a week before I go in and I fuck shit up.
That was one of the first questions we asked you at the top of this is, how did you feel the vow betrayed you? Which I think we're all very happy with the vow, but there's also so much more that capture and or didn't have because they weren't in our upper butts with the cameras, but they were close.
That set up me leaving even more, even though, you know, I was in your ear all the time about the fucking problems and I had no idea what they were. I was always like, Mark, what the fuck? Yeah. And then when you were done, I was like, fuck, I don't want to be the guy that's got to go meet with Keith for once a week and have those verbal diarrhea meetings. It's like, I'm not doing this. I'm done.
Well, by the way, also what I wanted desperately, Nip, is I wanted desperately to get you out. Desperately.
Well, that worked. That email was a good one.
And then do all the work.
Fuck that. No, I didn't want to go do the work you had been doing.
That's what I'm saying.
The work I was doing was totally different. And I had like 150 guys, you know, back in Vancouver. I was like, you know, I guess it's a day later because I signed an NDA. And then I'm like, okay, let's wreck this fucking thing. And by the way, the SOP chain of command that we all had to check in with our readiness, it fucking worked. It did. I went radio silent for a week. It freaked out everyone. And I went back and I said, I'm stepping down. Women are getting branded. And that went out through the chain of command.
Did it?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
Yeah, I didn't know that. People just came back like, what?
Did they pass the message on?
Just were out. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know they passed it on.
Oh, yeah.
And then later we also used
it just went to all the
coach tree. For those who don't know, we had, there, as well as
I know this part.
We had a coach tree, where we'd like.
Yeah, I didn't know that Nippy did that with the SOP. I didn't know if the guys actually passed it along. You know, that's the one good thing about guys. We're very military, so we're just like, okay, just pass it on. Whatever it is, just pass it on.
Yeah. And then I had to meet with a couple people that were like, really? Is this going on? Listen. Here's how this is going to go out. And I remember one particular person, I was like, this guy's branding women. My wife was branded. If you stand with this, you and I are at odds. He's like, but come on, what's it to it? And he'd been talking to Lucas. And I was like, no, this is how this is. We're at odds. My wife got branded. You're supporting her. Peace out.
Man, what an insane journey.
What a journey.
What an insane journey.
Good email, though.
Good Listen, email.
Good email. You called me
I'd
Anthony.
I'd never called you Anthony.
I was like, something's By the way, fucking
do you
up
know
here.
That I've known you guys for 16 years?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And never once did I call you Anthony in 16 years. No.
Nope. I didn't even know you know my there name was See? Anthony.
I was
People
leaving breadcrumbs everywhere.
Are gonna be like, who's Anthony?
Yeah. No, I was leaving breadcrumbs in so many places.
Dude, when I was, I kind of knew when you were packing up.
Yeah, I was trying to like, how do I say it without saying it?
I know, I felt it. I didn't know what it was. Like, you couldn't have come to
how
me.
How do you say you're leaving a call without saying you're leaving a call?
Yeah. Also, at that point, Nip, I didn't know Sarah was Brandon at that point. I just knew that there was this fucked up collateral thing going on. But when I found out that Sarah was branded, I just fucking saw like white rage, you know?
Yeah. Well, you knew you had.
Yeah. I was just fucking white rage.
And that was the conversation when you told me that there was sex involved and I saw white rage.
Yes. This is what the psychopaths don't take into account. They don't seem to understand that when you piss people off enough, they will not behave like robots.
No.
You know?
And he underestimated us.
That's interesting.
He underestimated our capacity. And especially.
That's interesting.
To circle back, Bonnie's capacity.
But I mean, tell you, he did not see that coming at all.
No. Nope.
I mean, it's interesting, though, because I was just thinking, like, Sarah, you and I hate it a lot. Mm-hmm. Nippy and Bonnie are on the same level. They're hated a little less. Hate us.
Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, they make fun of my name.
Well,
I don't know if actually Bonnie gets any hatred. Like, what's there to hate about Bonnie?
No, you
like,
guys, you guys were... You guys were the two generals in the front, and we were. It's requisite to the participation.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think.
Can I do one more chaps my ass?
Please chap away.
So when we left, and there was like that campaign against us, how do they justify that we got to green and we were somehow now suppressive or like bad eggs? Like, how did they justify that the failure of the system that two bad people like me and you could get so high up in the ranks?
Do you remember?
And Keith would miss it.
Do you remember in my letter to the inside, that long 18-page letter, the grab a glass of wine letter?
I did.
I wrote that. I said, when exactly did I become suppressive? Was it in South Africa? Was it here? I just asked them this question, like, where did it happen? Because I was so like astounded at the shit they were saying. You know, I think I might actually put that letter out in the world.
You should put that letter out. So for those who are listening, this is a letter he wrote after we left and the campaign had started. And Mark was like, fuck it, and wrote this 18-page letter.
Yeah.
Do you remember I said that somebody wrote a snarky question? And I just have to apologize now because the question was actually something. How do you reconcile with all the people that you manipulated and coerced into bringing them into expensive courses? And I wrote back because I had your back. No, I'm not going to be asking him that question. And I assume that if you're asking that, you haven't taken the time to fully understand how coercive control works. If you had that or any sense of compassion, you'd be asking the question in an entirely different way. Why don't you go think about that while you're on your mat? Namaste, which was a little snarky of me, I know.
Oh, look at you.
A little bit, Sarah.
Especially a protective of you. And then she wrote back and she had a yoga title in her name. She's like, actually, I do understand because I'm reckoning with the same question being asked of me in a similar situation, which is why I'm sincerely asking. I did not mean to offend at all. And I feel badly now and I'm going to have to fix that.
Oh, you need to apologize.
I will.
Shame.
I'm totally going to.
Shame.
I feel the shame. I do. Oh, yeah. And she also says, I was honestly not trying to offend. I think it's a fair question, one that I'm grappling with, having been in culty Baptiste yoga, which we're going to do an episode on for 20 years. I do understand how it works. I don't understand how to make good and heal from all the perpetrations that I'm responsible for.
Yeah.
So.
I'm
going to apologize for that, but yeah.
I think so. Like, I really think, I would just say to the person again, like, they just have to really look at what was their motivation
behind
everything they did. Because, you know, I find for the most part, it's very pure. You know, if she knew the result of what was actually going on before she was about to make those actions, I bet you she would have been horrified.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's
just like, of course.
When you have a soul, that's what you do.
Yeah. That's a really good question. Like, I'll ask, you know, if I'd known that women were going to get branded, of course not. Like,
because they don't start with that shit.
No, which goes back to the line bending. You don't start with, would you like to take a seminar and get the leader's initials seared into your crotch for $2,000?
Like, an example, just in terms of you and I, Sarah, like if standing in the water there, talking to you about this thing that I was doing that I was excited about. If I could have foreseen where it was going to go and the hurt that would have happened to you, I would have shut the fuck up.
Well, yeah, you would.
But I didn't know.
Of course. Yeah.
I didn't know because I didn't even imagine
that. And I know that. And I know that about you. I know that about you. And
but I'm thinking for her. It's good for her to understand, like, in terms of us, it may help her see, like, it's not, we had no idea what was going on. And it's very smart. I mean, I keep telling people, like, it's compartmentalized like the fucking NSA.
It's smart. Know?
Truth.
You don't know what's going on. You think so. I mean, listen, I mean, all those upper ranks whispering in each other's ears all the time. And I'd say, like, what the fuck is going on? It's like the fucking CIA in here. And they'd all look at me like afraid. Then, later I found out what's going on. Everybody's boning everybody and upset about it. I didn't know that's what's going on.
Yeah. I had no fucking idea. But literally what was going on is this guy was just tormenting all these of them. Women and they're all over
all
there.
Of them. Saying you're going to have the avatar baby.
I hadn't thought about that. Those meetings with the green, when I finally
the
got
whispering?
To green.
The whispering?
Well, it was just so tense.
Yes.
And I could never figure out why everyone was so fucking tense. But now I get it. They were all vying for his limp dick.
Yes.
Sorry to say that. Like, so
no, that's, that Sarah. That's what was going on. I finally realized later, like, all the whispering and the weirdness, which the guys weren't doing. And I mean, I would sometimes say, like, we're not doing it. Like, what are we missing here? And they'd look at me like, huh? Now I realize, like, I was bumping up against the big secrets. Yeah. Fuck. Right? Fuck.
And they weren't allowed to actually work whatever they
work the issues.
The whole thing.
So this is definitely an explicit. This is explicit.
Yes.
Which is not a surprise. It's not a surprise that it would be explicit.
You know, the fact that you're giving us your time and your insight and sharing your very sweet and good soul with us is just, it's healing. It's emotional. Sorry, Nibby. He always teases me to cry every episode. But
I'm good. I'm just dead inside.
Not every episode.
He's not.
Dead inside. I'm dead inside.
No, seriously, it means a lot to us. We've been hounding you to do this since we started, but this feels like at the right time. And
it just felt like the right time. Yeah, yeah. And I'm so happy to be on. And also, by the way, I think what you guys are doing is such a massive service to humanity. It's so important, you know. And the fact that you're dealing with, like, the pattern across all these different kinds of organizations and some of the incredible people. I mean, like I told you, I heard the Bolz Weber. I mean, what a magnificent human being, you know? So I think what you guys are doing is so important. And I sincerely hope you guys do as many seasons as you possibly can.
I know.
Because this shit ain't going away.
Thanks, Mark. That means a lot.
Yeah.
And so it's so nice to be,
thank you very much,
you know, friends again without the shackles of the rank. That bullshit rank system.
I know.
Now we can just have a normal relationship.
It's so much better. But the swearing stays.
Yeah,
the swearing was always there and it always stays.
And for that, I promote you to the rank of senior counselor. Sorry, just kidding.
Oh my God.
And that concludes part 2 of 2 of our epic podcast extravaganza with Mark Vicente.
I still think that can be a trilogy.
Maybe. Maybe season 4. We'll do that. I thought of another Chaps My Ass as I was chatting with Mark, but there wasn't really a segue to bring this story up. But do you remember, Nip, how terrible the food was at V Week?
Yeah, it was prison food.
It was prison food, and it was also vegetarian prison food.
That's why I would take off and get a steak around the corner.
Well, the thing that I was thinking about as Mark was talking, and maybe there would have been a segue, but, you know, I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, is just recognizing, like, how kind of obedient I was, but really inside I was like, fuck this. Like,
yeah, there's no way you and I have gotten along if I couldn't come back and go, that's bullshit. That's bullshit. That's bullshit.
Yeah. Or you couldn't have been like, hey, Sarah, let's skip this. You know, let's blow this pop stand and go get a steak. Like, the leadership.
That's what I said, Sarah.
I know. You pretty much said that.
No, I don't talk like that.
I know.
But you'd be like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to get a steak. She's like, you can't. I'm like, what do you mean I can't? I got a car and it's right around the corner. Oh, I guess you can.
Like, I really did feel like we were doing something really bad. Like, we were, you know, leaving campus to go smoke a cigarette or something, but we were going to get a steak. No, I know. But, like, you know, when you're at school and you're like, oh, I don't smoke cigarettes either. Let it be known. But going to off campus, off the YMCA campus to go get a steak at that amazing little grill.
It was good.
What was that little restaurant called in that town?
No idea, but it was like right on that little
strip. Oh, so good.
Yeah, it was good.
Anyway, is one of the things that I hid from the leadership, that I was not going to eat that food for
bad
10
girls,
days.
Bad girls, what you gonna,
what you gonna do?
What you gonna, what you gonna do when they come for you?
Speaking of bad girls, there's no segue here. Do you have any word salad for us?
Yeah, that one failed epically. All right, yeah, we can work with it.
We have been getting a lot of feedback about our great word salad, and this week we have one that was not from Keith.
We went to Instagram. Someone came up with one, and we're going to start maybe accepting some submissions here and there. Not that I don't have a wealth of these.
There will be a contest, I think, of the best word salad from other cults. Word salad.
This one comes from Recovering from Cults. It's in a place card on a dinner table with a glass of red wine in the background just to set the mood for the word salad. And it's surrounded by, I think, spinach salad and some gold silverware, or goldware, as it were. To remember must come from a memory, and this must be given authority in the present. Shut up.
What does that mean?
Come on, dude.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I'm done. That's just so infuriating.
Yeah. And that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on A Little Bit Culty.
Goodbye. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean. I'm hanging on to the weight of my love. If I let go of it all, I could leave. But I know. Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like, take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. Takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.